and welcome to this episode of Battling with Business with me, Gareth Tennant, and with Chris Kitchener. In this podcast, we explore ideas and concepts around teams and teamwork, leaders and leadership, and all things in between. It's normally a discussion between a former Royal Marines officer and a product manager from the world of business, comparing and contrasting our experiences as we work out what makes teams, leaders, and businesses tick. This week, Chris is overseas on business. And so whilst he was away, I was fortunate enough to interview Tom Mallons. Tom is the MD at an organisation called Sandler. Sandler is a global consultancy specialising in sales performance, execution and business transformation. When I caught up with Tom, we were keen to discuss what the role of sales actually is and what we can learn in terms of sales and sales training and how we can apply this to wider business decision making. So here I am discussing the value of sales and sales training with Tom Mallons. Thank you for joining us. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about who you are and why you've gone into the world of sales training?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Tom Mallons. I am based here in Birmingham and I'm a sales management and sales leadership trainer and consultant. So why did I get into it? I think like many or perhaps most salespeople, I fell into it. I've never yet met a youngster who has told me my burning ambition is to grow up and get into sales. I kind of fell into it when other career options didn't materialize or I just wasn't sure what the next step for me was. And I kind of fell into sales. I mean, the long story short is that having gone into sales, I was selling specialty adhesives to manufacturing companies about 12, 15 years ago for a big Swiss chemical producer. Did okay, didn't set the world alight, but didn't do too shabbily either. And I ran into all these kind of common challenges that I think most salespeople face. Enthusiastic yeses that turn into slow no's, constant pressure to discount, and just getting treated a bit crap, really. I ran into all those challenges, and then through one means or another, I stumbled across a book that gave some advice for salespeople, a sales training book. And I thought, my God, why didn't the company I work for share this kind of information with me when I first started? You know, I would have done a lot better if I'd had some guidance or training. And one thing led to another. And that book led me into the route of training myself and going into sales training many, many years afterwards. That's how I arrived at this point in time.
Cool. What was the book?
The book was called, and you might have to write this down, the snappily titled You Can't Teach a Kid to Ride a Bike at a Seminar by David Sandler. We call it the bike book.
The bike book. Sure. You can't teach a kid to ride a bike at a seminar. That's cool. I like that. And that links to a few of the things Chris and I have talked about in the past where we've discussed. In fact, we're going to do a whole podcast shortly on mythology around business books. And the fact that there are loads of really, really good business books. There's also loads of really terrible ones. But there's some really good stuff out there. But just by reading it doesn't automatically make you better. It doesn't solve the problems. And there's a lot of sort of MDs and CEOs that sort of get their executive teams like that. They must read this book. They have these reading lists. Everybody gets a free copy. And then you have these away days and suddenly everybody's expected to be better. And there's also a sort of cult mythology around some of these ideas, which are in their own right quite good, but they're not the silver bullet that's going to, you know, transform your organization. So I like that because it alludes to the same kind of thing that seminars, good way of imparting information, but it doesn't magically transform you. So we talk about sales in quite a negative way often on the podcast because the sales team are, I think we probably use them as our sort of straw man to throw darts at, because often, especially in the world that Chris works in the software development world, there's a disconnect between the product development side of the business and the sales side of the business. And you often end up with sales being driven by numbers. And we've just done an episode on measurement of effect versus measurement of performance. And sales numbers is a performance metric. It's an ego thing. And of course, sales is incredibly important, but it seems to have its own culture. It seems to have its own sort of mythology. And I think sales is one of those things that needs to be, in a lot of organizations, brought more closely into the heart of the organization and aligned far more closely with product development, with all the other aspects of the organization. But likewise, all the other people need to be part of the sales team because it's not a standalone thing. Am I right in thinking that?
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's a huge blind spot or a huge missed opportunity in many organizations that there is no culture around sales and the fact that if sales don't happen, the business falls apart. Long term, in the short term, it can be propped up with funding and investment. But in the long term, if a business doesn't make sales, nothing else matters. Doesn't matter how good your product is. If people aren't buying it, if people aren't selling, then all bets are off. And I think that's a huge area for opportunity, because the salespeople generally, if they're doing their job correctly, they're the ones that are speaking to existing and potential customers every day and finding out from the coalface, so to speak, what people like, what people don't like, what their challenges are, what their problems are that they're hoping this product or service will solve. And without that direct input and direct feedback, all that stuff gets lost, and the marketing team, the product development team never get the benefit of all those insights. So I agree, huge missed opportunity.
It's really interesting when you talk about sales being the people that interact with the people out there, the customers, the potential customers, and you talk about it as an input into the business. They're collecting information, whereas I think instinctively, I do certainly, but I think a lot of people think about sales as an output. It's about going out and telling people about what we do. But it's interesting that straight away you see it, or you're describing it as a way of collecting information.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sales done correctly is primarily about gathering information. So we have a few rules of thumb, or a few little rules that we like to share with people. And one of them is the following: that your success as a sales professional is determined far more by the quality of questions you ask than it is by the quality of statements you make.
Yeah.
It's a tendency for people to think that sales is about making statements that give information. The best salespeople realize it's about asking questions that gather information. That's the information you need to decide, is this person a good fit for our product or service? Is the right thing for them to buy this product or service? Do they have a problem we can fix? Do they have money that they might be able to invest? You know,
yeah,
all about gathering information first.
And presumably that goes beyond just gathering information about whether this person is a prospective client for my current product. It's also about starting to understand the needs, demands of the market, and therefore you can feed that back into other bits of the organization to say, we need to start shifting the way that the product works, or the color, or the interaction, or whatever it is. And so there should be a really short feedback loop between sales and product development, because you have that input and that relationship with the potential client base and the market.
Absolutely. I'm sure you've seen it, but in so many companies, you've got these silos, the marketing department, the product development department, the sales department, the accounting, finance department. None of them talk to each other. They don't understand what each other does. They don't particularly like or get on or value what each of the different departments do. And all that information and feedback just gets lost. It's a real shame and a problem. One exercise that we've done in some companies is just going in and facilitating sessions where the marketing and the sales departments actually talk to each other and get some understanding of how they can work and communicate more effectively. And that's just super powerful.
Yeah, I think there's a reason why on this podcast it's taken us over a year before we've sort of grasped the nettle to talk about sales. And that's, for me, talking about things from a military perspective, it doesn't necessarily straight away align to military organisations. We don't sell anything in the direct sense. But straight away, this conversation is linking to lots of the ideas and thoughts that Chris and I have explored around how the frontline doers, so in the military, that's your, you know, ground forces patrolling around in the operating environment. It's your infantiers patrolling through towns and villages, how they are the eyes and ears that sense what's going on externally to the organization, and how important it is that they are firstly aware of and connected to the vision and the strategic objectives of that wider organization. And we talk a lot about this concept of mission command, the idea of telling people why they're doing things, not just what they need to do, but also these short feedback loops. And we talk a lot, and I particularly talk a lot about empowering people that are at the edges of the organization. And I tend to talk about edges rather than hierarchies, because I think it's more useful. Empowering soldiers and Marines out on the ground to pick up on changes, to report those things back, to create those feedback loops. And it's really fascinating that straight away we're talking about, you know, effectively I'm seeing soldiers as an analogy for your salespeople that are out on the ground talking to and interacting with prospective clients and with clients. And then you're talking about the silos in these organizations, and that's exactly the problem we have in the military, is trying to break these silos down. So I think we've kind of neatly got on to why you've then gone into the world of training and facilitation. So do you want to talk a little bit about what that looks like? Is it you in a pinstripe suit telling people how to go door to door and sell more dusters?
I wish I owned a pinstripe suit. I sadly don't. So there's a few guide rails or guidelines that guide the training services we offer, and maybe these might be some things that we could have an interesting discussion about. So the first is, we don't really focus on doing what we call short-term, one-and-done training. What we do, everything we're geared up to deliver, is about doing long-term training. And by long-term, I mean multi-year, working with a company, working with their sales teams for 1, 2, 3+ years, because really you only see the true benefits of sales training, management training, I would say leadership training, or any kind of training, when you get long-term behavior change. And if I'm going to ask you a question, if you do a half day, a 1 day, a 2 day boot camp, no matter how good it is, what do you think people revert to doing the minute they're out of the boot camp? The thing that they've just learned about for 5 minutes, or the thing they've been doing for 7 years?
Yeah, absolutely. It's those learned behaviours, isn't it? So we had this, I can't remember which podcast it was, but only last week or so, where we were talking about the fact that everybody's too busy. And so you get taught this great advice. There's these brilliant sort of quotes that everybody writes down vigorously, and you feel motivated, and as soon as you walk out of that seminar or training day, the real world hits you again. You're dealing with your emails, you're dealing with day-to-day activity, and so you default back to those muscle memory learned behaviours. Yeah, so absolutely, a half-day seminar isn't going to, you know, set the world on fire and change things.
No, and there's a place for them. They can be very useful, but in and of themselves, they're not going to produce sustained long-term changes in behavior. And I really like that phrase you used about muscle memory, because what we really need to do is drill into and work with salespeople so they can produce changes in their behavior that lead to more productive and profitable and helpful outcomes, in the same way that an athlete needs to drill in, build up muscle memory. So, you know, when the starting gun fires or when it's match day, they don't have to worry about what they're going to do. It's just drilled into them.
You're effectively talking about guiding cultural change and behavioral change, rather than here's some techniques you can apply today to increase sales, which is, I think, from my perspective, certainly the kind of cliched idea of sales training is this. If I'm being kind, here's some techniques that will help you explain your product better. If I was being slightly insidious about it, it's here's some techniques to pull the wool over the eyes of the prospective client and get them to spend more money. Sales has this kind of negative, cliched idea of the secondhand car dealer or the double glazing salesman. You know, these ideas that sales is about effectively misleading people. But of course, good sales is about having repeat customers. It's about building customer relationships. And so it's really pleasing that you're talking about it in these terms. I think for me, it's interesting that you focus on sales, whereas when I work with clients and talk about cultural change and developing behavioral change, I work from the perspective of helping organizations just make better decisions. So it's about linking strategy to delivery or operations. And I suspect you're focusing more on the operations end of things, the doing. But do you find you also then need to change the behaviours of the other bits of the organisation?
So one of the blind spots we talk about in a lot of our training, a lot of our work, we talk about there being some common blind spots that hold organisations back. One of those blind spots is not focusing on lead generation. And what we really mean by that is a collective blind spot within the organization where they don't believe they need to constantly be looking for new sources of revenue. So this isn't just about the sales department not constantly hunting for new leads. It's about the organization as a whole not recognizing that they need to be constantly looking for new long-term streams of income. And that is the customer service people, that is anyone that answers the phone, anyone that speaks to anyone outside of the organization, that is people in accounting and finance, that is leadership, that is management. Everyone needs to be focused on that. And too many organizations, and I hear this all the time, they have this kind of blasé attitude to it, which is, oh, we get all our business through word of mouth, or people just come to us, or, oh, we don't sell. We're just established in the industry. And maybe that is the case, but that doesn't last forever.
Yeah. Is it because sales is difficult? It's uncomfortable. You're talking about money. Talking about money is deeply uncomfortable, isn't it? We like to be polite. But it's also just, it's hard work. And it's not necessarily, I know from my perspective, I left the military passionate about helping people make sense of complex problems, but not passionate about, you know, cold calling people to ask whether they need help solving complex problems. It's difficult to do. And therefore, you know, if you can just palm it off and say, well, that's the sales department's job, you can forget about it. But of course, all you do there is create a silo.
Yes, absolutely. So you're right. It goes against all of our natural instincts, or certainly a lot of our learned instincts. So I'm going to put you on the spot, Gareth, and ask you a couple of questions, because when I grew up, my parents gave me bits of advice. Maybe they gave you similar advice. So one that I was given was, hey, Tom, this is like, you know, 5-year-old Tom, see if you can complete the sentence. Never talk to.
Oh, never talk to strangers.
Yeah, bingo. So never talk to strangers.
Yeah.
And then maybe you've been raised to be, you know, very, very polite. So you get told never speak unless you are
spoken to.
Spoken to. There you go. Yeah. And then last but not least, you've already mentioned this one. It's rude to talk about
Money and politics.
Yeah, yeah, money and politics. And what do you have to do in sales? You have to interrupt strangers, talk to them even though they haven't asked to be talked to, and you have to speak to them about money. So it goes against all our learned conditioned behaviours. And for even a lot of the best salespeople, it's still uncomfortable. What I like about sales training, what I like about what I do, is that it gives people a set of tools they can use to just overcome those challenges and put themselves in control.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think we need to take a quick break now, but when we come back, I'd like to ask you more about the relationship between sales training and generally sort of management and leadership training more generally across organisations. See you after the break. Right, welcome back.
What do you think the difference is between training sales and other leadership and sort of management training that's available?
I'm not sure if there is a big difference. Effective training, I think, is training that's going to produce or not long-term behaviour change. Like, it's very easy to, as you mentioned at the beginning, pick up a nice concept, read a book, get a cool new idea, but things should be judged on the results they deliver. And if all they deliver is a nice idea, then it hasn't really succeeded. I mean, one thing that I'd be curious to hear your experiences of, because we see this all the time in our training, is if you have short-term training for people on a front-end role, for example, sales, but it could be any other kind of frontline activity, nothing really changes. If you want to produce long-term behavior change in the organization, you've got to have leaders and managers involved. That's what produces change at the sharp end, because people do what they're rewarded for doing. I mean, I'd be curious to hear your experiences in business or military scenarios.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we've talked a lot on the podcast in previous episodes about the relationship between leaders and management sort of in an organization in a formal capacity and doers, and how they're all part of the culture. They're all leaders in their own right to a greater or lesser extent. And if there isn't alignment between what the organization is trying to achieve and what the individuals are doing, then it can never progress. And I get the impression that sales is just another part of that. You know, it's another ingredient in the cake mix that Chris really likes to use that analogy of, it's a recipe for making a cake. And I think there's a common thread with all the people that we talk to on this podcast about, you know, whether they're experts in sales, experts in creativity, experts in other aspects of business, there's this common thread, which is all about communication, trust, building the links between what you're trying to achieve and what you're doing. And I don't think this is any different. I think what is perhaps slightly different is that there are, as we've already talked about, there's these kind of nervousness and awkwardness around some of the aspects of sales. And I think your three questions about what you get taught as a child: don't talk to strangers, you know, don't speak unless spoken to, and don't talk about money or politics. We are culturally hardwired to be reticent about sales. And I think there's also this sort of cliched perception of sales being a bit sleazy, and so people want to stay away from it, and that creates silos in its own right, which straight away creates problems. And it's always, as a non-sales, non-marketing person, you know, I'm very much in the world of management, leadership and problem solving. I've always found it really strange that sales and marketing see themselves as two different entities, because to me, they're both part of understanding the requirements of the customer and communicating with that customer or potential customer. And so I still find it difficult when I talk to people who, and they say sales has this one perspective and marketing has another, and they're always at each other's throats, because for me, it's all part of the same thing.
You're absolutely right. They certainly should be united in their mission. But of course, in practical terms, in reality, they're very often not. People have their own little agendas, their departmental agendas, the politics of the organization. They've got their career objectives. But I think in a well-run organization, the head of marketing and the sales director are talking regularly. There's a regular scheduled meeting in the diary. And this is a big thing that we talk a lot about and teach a lot. They have a common language. So in sales, in many companies, you'll hear people use words like lead, prospect, opportunity. And they all mean different things very often.
Yeah.
When you actually drill down and ask them what they really mean. And one of the real big wins for companies that are looking to change to a more sales-focused culture and really improve their revenue results is just having a shared language. So the people in marketing, the people in sales are all talking about the same thing, because otherwise you get, we call it mutual mystification. You just get one person saying something and then the other person hearing what they think the other person meant, which is not what they actually meant.
Do you think part of that is because marketing, you know, there's that famous quote of only 50% of marketing works, but knowing which 50%. In sales, there's a very direct metric. There's something that you can quantifiably show how successful or unsuccessful you've been. And in other bits of the business, it's a bit more esoteric. So how effective have you been at marketing? Well, it's kind of subjective. How effective are you at innovation? It's all very difficult. Do you think that's part of the problem, in that the people in the sales world can very tangibly see, look how good I've been, and they can be held to account as well, whereas other bits of the organisation are using different sort of data points?
I think that definitely can be an issue, measuring success. One of the things I like about sales is that it's there in black and white. Someone sold more than you. Guess what? They had the same product and service. Everything, all the reasons you come up with about why they did better, really, they're just excuses. We see that all the time. You know, someone with same products and services in one department does brilliantly, someone else, and they'll come up with all kinds of reasons. But of course, it's everyone's fault apart from their own. Marketing's fault, product development's fault, the economy's fault, Brexit's fault, the price of oil's fault. I think one of the hallmarks of a good salesperson, and I suspect just the top performer in any field, is that they just recognise that ultimately the buck stops with them.
Yeah.
It's up to them. They've got to take responsibility for it. I like that about sales. You're right. In a lot of other departments, the metrics that are measured are what improve. So if you measure the wrong thing, I suspect you've seen examples of that.
Yeah, we did a whole episode on measurements of effect and measurements of performance only a few weeks ago. One of the things that's quite interesting, I think, is sales is, from one perspective, definitely a measurement of effectiveness. Yeah, it is about your delivery of service or product to the external market. But if you're strategically trying to get to somewhere else, you're pivoting, you're shifting your product to a service-based market or whatever it is, actually the sales can just be something that is easy to measure but not necessarily what you should be measuring. And there are examples of
businesses where the sales figures become distracting to the strategic change of the organization. So how do you, as a sales guru, how do you, you know, teach organizations not to become enamored by just focusing on sales figures?
Well, it all depends what the organization's goals and objectives are. We've got to find out from the owner, where is it they're trying to get to? What is it you're trying to achieve? Now, of course, most owners aren't really clear on that. They've got a vague notion of wanting to retire, wanting to pass the business on at some point, but it's all kind of indeterminate. So number one, and this is again another one of these common blind spots, the owner has to know where it is they're trying to get to in life, and then they got to make sure that the business is helping them get there. If the business isn't helping the owner, like, why are they doing it? You know,
yeah.
It's got to be alignment with those two objectives. And now we can make sure we've got a strategy that fulfills those objectives. Once we've got a clear strategy, we can make sure that there are management systems and processes within the business that deliver on the strategy. We can make sure we got the right staff within the business that can deliver on those management and operational structures. And last but not least, we got the right skills to fulfill all those objectives. The big, or one of the mistakes that companies make, is especially with sales training, they just dive right into skills. Hey, what are the skills that people need to get past gatekeepers or to close more business? They go right to the skills bit. What they really should be doing is taking a step back and thinking strategically, where am I trying to get to? To come back to your original point, I totally agree that sales alone might not always be the only important number.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we talked about the fact that salespeople are typically people that have a stronger relationship or more interaction with the customer, the potential customer, the external market. If sales are not always the sole metric that we're going to measure success by, and in the MOE podcast, Chris talked about Burberry being a good example of undermining their brand by focusing on sales that had a long-term detrimental impact. And there's the quite cliched examples now of Nokia or Kodak or BlackBerry, where actually the focus on numbers and sales meant that they perhaps didn't appreciate how the market was shifting and how competitors were shifting to that change around them. How do you get salespeople to provide the right information and insights when sometimes by doing that, perhaps the change that the organization needs to make doesn't align with what's easy for the salesperson? How do you do that? How do you get salespeople to be good advocates of market intelligence?
Well, I think this is where the role of leadership and management comes in, because left to their own devices, salespeople will do what is within their comfort zone. And typically what is within their comfort zone won't be the same as what needs to happen for the organization to get where it wants to go. So one of the roles of a good manager is to have real clarity on that ideal client profile. They really know what that organization that they want to do business with looks like, and typically it will be a slightly bigger organization than salespeople would like it to be. There'll be more people to fight through, more people involved in the decision-making unit. Role of a good manager is to make that clear and reward the salespeople for doing the behaviors that are going to get them those kind of accounts, rather than rewarding the salespeople for doing easy stuff that is well within their comfort zones, that's keeping the organization where it is.
Yeah.
So the conversation around that, of course, needs to happen, number one, and the earlier it happens, the better. And ideally, it should happen during the recruitment and hiring process. You know, hey, we're going to ask you to be calling on these kind of accounts and speaking to these kind of people. Is that going to be a problem?
See, I'm thinking all the time about my time in the Marines and the difficulty you had in balancing, getting people ready to what we used to call fight tonight. So keeping your skills up to standard, that if you're, you know, called upon to go on operations tonight, we're ready to go, versus continually experimenting and identifying change technologically, sociologically, whatever it was, so that we're ready to fight tomorrow, so we're ready to fight in 10 years time. And that balance is always really, really difficult. And it seems very, very similar, that cash is king in the commercial world. And so selling stuff now is what's going to give us the opportunity to invest in R&D and innovation and hire new people and grow and all of those things. But straight away, there's a tension, because you want to focus on doing that because it brings money in. But it's very, very easy then to constantly fight the small fires that are in front of you and not think strategically about the future. How much do you think understanding sales, understanding the psychology and the behaviours that are required to be good at sales, are generic skills that would make you better at being a strategic manager, a strategic leader, at any other point in the organisation?
So I'm very biased, so I'll declare my bias up front. Surprise, surprise. I think they're extremely important skills. Fundamentally, I think sales skills are just communication skills.
Yeah.
Applied in a practical and arguably most difficult environment. It's very popular to talk about communication skills, negotiation skills, but it's also very easy to have those negotiations or communications and tell yourself, oh, we did a great job. The thing I like about sales is you either got the result or you didn't. All the skills that we teach when we do training are fundamentally skills around how can we build trust with other human beings? How can we help people take decisions? How can we find win-win outcomes? And so I think those are really fundamental skills that maybe with no exceptions, or certainly very few exceptions, everyone's going to benefit from. Like you said, people avoid it because there's a stigma around sales, mainly because when it's done badly, it is sleazy. So people remember that. When it's done well, they don't think that they were sold to. When it's done really well, they think, oh, I just decided to buy something. So they don't even remember it.
Brilliant. Tom, I think we've got to bring this to a close now, but thank you for firstly dispelling some of the myths around sleazy double glazing salesmen and opening up the discussion. I think it's been really useful and really interesting to see your approach to sales and how those skills are applicable across the organization, and how it's reinforcing the message that Chris and I keep coming back to time and time again, which is it's about good communication, it's about trust, it's about good decision making, which means everybody has to understand what the purpose is. Everybody has to be aligned to that and then apply their individual skills within their individual roles in order to help the organization grow and develop. So that's been really, really pleasing. Tom, for our listeners, if they want to know more and they want to get in touch with you, how would they do that, and what is it you offer?
So easiest place to find me is on LinkedIn. You can just type my name into LinkedIn, Tom Mallens, Mallens. And you'll find me there. Drop me a connection request. That's where I hang out on social media most of the time, my main platform of activity. In terms of what I offer, we basically work with ambitious owners, directors of businesses. They've got a track record of success, but they've kind of got that ambition and that belief that there is another gear of performance for them and their organization. And they see tremendous untapped potential in their salespeople, their customer service people. And maybe they got some frustrations around, you know, deals not closing at the right margins or at the right kind of frequency. And they think that life would be a lot better if they just solved those problems. So that's the kind of stuff we help with. I hope that was an appropriate summary.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant. And it's absolutely what we're all about. It's trying to link people together, keep that conversation going, and allow people to form those connections. So I encourage people that do feel like they have those problems, which is pretty much everybody in every business, I think, to reach out, connect with you and start that conversation. Thanks for giving up your time and providing your insights. And hopefully we'll have you back on the podcast in the future and continue the conversation.
I'd really appreciate
now,
that.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Gareth.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
So, Chris, you're back with us. How was your business trip?
It was very good, thank you. And listeners to the podcast will be amused to know that I had been on an offsite where I met with my team and we talked about how we could be a better team. So that perhaps to go to prove, hopefully, we do try to practice what we preach a lot. But it was an excellent visit. I went to Austin in Texas. I had some excellent barbecue, some excellent Mexican food, and I took electric scooters around Austin, which if anyone ever travels to Austin, do that. That's very exciting. So the interview, obviously, I caught up with the interview with Tom. I thought that was excellent. And what I really enjoyed about it was, in my world, in terms of product and business, obviously, the world of sales is something I'm very familiar with, and we work very closely with our colleagues in sales. But I could imagine that for our military colleagues, that was either a mildly interesting sojourn into the world of sales. And I could imagine people were thinking, well, how is that relevant to me? But what struck me was, even though there isn't a sales organization part of the military per se, think of it this way, it was incredibly relevant because salespeople are there to communicate and influence. Now, in the case of what Tom was talking about, that's obviously to get some money at the other end and an exchange of goods. But in the military, and in fact, in all of business, this idea that we're all salespeople to some level, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I did sort of touch on that, I think, during the conversation. And in the time I was in the military, we went through a phase where we got very excited about information operations and the idea of influencing people. And by the time I left, the definition had sort of shifted slightly. And actually, we decided that all activity that we do, whether it's, you know, at the far extreme end, the delivery of lethal force and sort of extreme violence, all the way through to embedded partnering with host nation security forces or you know, all of those kind of soft effect activities, all of that is about changing people's attitudes, ultimately to change their behaviors. It's just in the commercial world, those behaviors you want them to change to are buying your products or services.
Yeah. So, and if people are thinking, well, that's a bit of a cliche that we influence people, fine, I think that's true, but you might argue it's a cliche. Here's the other one then I'll throw out there as well is, and this is true in the business world, I think this is a really good example of that, in inverted commas, other group of people within your organization who often do things that you don't understand. And I think that's a really good lesson. It's the importance of understanding the roles of other teams and particularly how they work. And Tom touched on this in a couple of occasions, but this is something that I work with my team a lot to say, okay, particularly with sales, like what are their motivations? Like what are they driven by? What are they trying to achieve? The next one, which people don't think about, is what are their challenges? What is it that they find difficult and ultimately, what do they need to achieve? And how, as we, as either a group, a function within the business, or even more broadly the business, how do we align to support that goal? And I think sales is a really great example of a misunderstood or narrowly understood part of the business where people say, well, they just go and say nice things to people and they get money. No, no, no. There is an awful lot more to that. So I think that the relevance of the discussion with a sales organization is useful across all of those different dimensions. A, it's good to understand what these guys do and how they think about what they're doing. B, it's valuable to think of it in terms of, well, we're all salespeople to some degree. And C, this is a great example. If that was a surprise to you, even if whether you're a military or business, guess what? There are other functions you probably don't understand either. And wouldn't it be better if you learned them as well?
Yeah, I was absolutely struck by the overlap between what Tom was saying and what we've said on many episodes before about the need for internal integration, breaking down those silos. And of course, we all know that, and it kind of feels like common sense, but when you actually drill down into the reasons why these silos exist, it comes down to different cultural perspectives on what people are for. And I said it in the conversation to Tom, but I am still absolutely dumbstruck as to why the commercial world, as a sort of standard practice, separates out marketing and sales as two different things.
You would get lots of people argue. So I've been in organizations where sales owns marketing, and I've been in organizations where obviously sales don't own marketing, and it's a different place, but it's fascinating. But it's interesting. Yeah. We came back to that sort of familiar refrain of breaking down silos between organizations. And I think it's easy to fall into the trap of saying, because silos at a high level are a bad thing, and so we should break them down. Let me turn it on its head. For me, and this is something I've lived throughout, frankly, most of the organizations I've worked in, the reason why you want to break those silos down is because of the importance of aligning both the sales and the product strategy with the business strategy. Let me turn that around. The business strategy should drive the sales strategy and the product strategy. And I think that the sales and product strategy are kind of two sides of the same coin. If we're trying to sell product X, the product organization notionally should be making product X better. But I say that in terms of sort of the business strategy drives the sales and the product strategy, you would be surprised how many people don't make that connection. In previous lives, I have been told by the business, what's the product strategy? And I've literally said, what's the business strategy? And they have said, no, I asked first, what's the product strategy? And you realize, hang on a minute, these three things connect to one another and drive one another. And so that to me was really, really important. And again, in terms of, if we think around the challenges of those silos, just sit back and think about the kinds of people that typically are within these organizations. A sales organization is typically that more gregarious, outgoing, extrovert kind of culture. And product, and particularly development, often is more of the introvert kind. And so actually you've got these natural conditions that imply product and engineers probably wouldn't go down to the bar with salespeople. And actually that's where one of your problems is, because you need them to come together. So I thought that was, you didn't get a chance to touch on that too much, but I thought that was really important. And just to develop that one touch further, in terms of the business strategy, here's the question businesses need to ask. What kind of growth do you want and where? And you might say, well, that's easy. I want more money. That wasn't what I asked. What kind of growth do you want? Do you want to maximize the existing market space with what you've got? And again, that could be in terms of, I want to go back to my existing customers and sell them additional things. Or it might be, I don't want to go back to my existing customers because I think they're already saturated. I want to go find new customers, or I want to optimize my pricing, or I want to grow the addressable market. So this idea of business strategy driving a sales strategy, anyone who thinks a sales strategy is, how do I sell the number that is my target? That is not a sales strategy. That is, and I think we're coming back to measurement of effect, which you talked about in the discussion, but obviously it was a recent podcast. All of these things come together. And so when someone says to me, what's the product strategy? Actually, it goes all the way back to the business strategy and the sales strategy, because these things have to sort of support one another.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we did an episode very early on defining strategy and what it was. I think we need to revisit strategy and look at how you not only define what strategy is, but how you connect the overarching strategy of the organization to specific functions and functional areas within that organization, so that you can start to link things like your sales strategy, your marketing strategy, your data strategy, all of these things. Because you're right, too often they get written in isolation and they're not aligned, and sometimes they're actually fratricidal and they damage each other. So well, I think we need to do a whole episode on building strategy.
It's funny, I've been just literally yesterday come back off holiday, and we were driving through France, and so we got to listen to lots of podcasts and various different people talking about strategy. I was taken back to when we were recording that podcast, difference between vision, strategy, tactics. I think you're right. This is the right time. And just before people think they're going to, as it were, recycle that episode, let's give me a really good example, or let me give a really good example of how strategy also needs to evolve, because this is something I've seen over a number of occasions, and it relates very much to the sales world. So back when I was working for Adobe, we sold to what we call integrators a server product. It did something with the server. And so I worked with a number of these relatively small, often startup companies. And here was the challenge that those businesses had. When they were new, any sale was a win. I mean, literally, we need to pay our bills. And so if a customer comes and says to us, can you build me an X? If they didn't have an X, and assuming obviously it was related to what they did, they would say, I would be delighted to go build that for you. And so what would often happen, and you see this a surprisingly large number of times, is at the beginnings of a business, literally the sale is the single most important thing, because we've got to pay the bills. You know, we will do whatever the customer wants. But there's a really interesting transition point where someone says the cost of us building many custom products, in other words, doing one-offs for each of our customers, there was a point where that was valuable. And now there is a point at which that prevents growth. And what the smart people start to say is, I need to not have 20 versions of something broadly similar that was tailored to each of my customers. They say, we need to build a single product. The point being is they need to be able to create and focus on one thing that can be sold many times. So in simple terms, people start in the custom startup mode where I will build whatever you want. And businesses at some point need to transition into the, I build it once and sell it 10 times. And that transition is really, really hard. Think about this. If you've got a sales organization that has got into the mindset of, we can make money when a customer says, can you solve a problem? You get into that habit. You look for the next person whose problem you could solve. But actually what the business wants them to do is say, stop doing that. We need to now transition. And it's the transition that's the hardest, away from finding five new customers that want a special and come up with the next 10 customers that want the one thing that we're selling. And so this to me is about an evolution of a business, an evolution of a sales strategy, and an evolution of a product strategy. So I think I've lived this on multiple occasions. That's really hard to do. So I do wish I'd have been on the call with Tom, because it'd have been really interesting to talk about how a sales strategy evolves and when and how you do it, because I think it's just as challenging as it is for product people as well with their strategy.
Well, look, I think Tom has agreed to come back, so we should absolutely take him up on that and get him back to have that discussion. We should absolutely do an episode on how you build and run a strategy. For now, though, I think we've probably got to draw this to a close. So thanks for jumping in and having that discussion at the end.
Thanks for holding the fort while I was busy eating Mexican food, and I'll try to make it back for the next one. But thank you for doing that. It was a great interview, and thanks to Tom. Hopefully he's going to be listening to this. Thanks for jumping in and helping us out, and we'll look forward to speaking to you again and continue the conversation soon.
Wonderful. Cool. So you've been listening to Battling with Business. If you want to get involved in the conversation, then we'd be delighted to hear your comments and your questions. You can reach us at Battling with Biz. That's on X. Or you can email us at battlingwithbusiness@gmail.com. But for now, though, thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.